Good morning, Council. Now, in order for us to be able to see you, I'm going to need you to speak. So I will first introduce the case of Lisa A. Curtis versus Cloquet Carlton Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Ms. Updegraff, are you present?
I'm present.
All right, and then I'll just make sure that Ms. Dobbins, are you present?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. And if you'll please state your full name for us in the record, and then you may begin.
My name is Gwen Updegraff. I'm an attorney with Legal Aid Service of Northeastern Minnesota representing the appellant.
Thank you. Please proceed.
May it please the court, this case concerns Section 8 housing vouchers. Along with public and subsidized housing, Section 8 is one of the most important safety net programs in the country. It provides rental assistance to low-income families. The purpose of the program is to provide decent, affordable housing to low-income families. My client, Lisa Curtis, is a disabled mother, single mother of two. She moved to Cloquet in 2012 and was able to rent her sister's house because her sister was relocating to Florida. And in 2015, she obtained a Section 8 voucher. At the time that she got the Section 8 voucher from the appellee, Cloquet Carlton HRA, neither she nor her sister Laura Sheely realized that the program did not allow voucher holders to rent from family members, including sisters. HRA did not realize that Ms. Sheely was Ms. Curtis' sister. This came to HRA's attention in 2018 when Ms. Curtis's housing specialist, Bob Nelson, was doing a routine inspection, and Ms. Curtis made a reference to Ms. Sheely being her sister. At that point, HRA terminated Ms. Curtis's voucher. To back up for a minute, in general, Section 8 holders may not rent from family members, but there is an exception.
Well, you're not disputing that there was a violation. I mean, the thrust of your argument is whether the conduct of Ms. Curtis was serious enough to go to the termination rather than being a lesser where it would be considered to be negligent. Isn't that really what you're arguing? I don't know that we have facts in dispute.
We don't have facts in dispute. And in fact, in this case, neither HRA nor the hearing officer ever made any findings that there was fraud in this case. Mr. Nelson, the housing specialist at the hearing, said, "We're not saying it's fraud, we're saying it was negligent. She should have read the papers she signed." So if you look at what they're saying is we're terminating because she violated a family obligation. Family obligations are at 24 CFR 982.551, and there's the one that they're claiming was violated is B, which is the family must supply information that's requested by HRA, and the information supplied must be true and complete. That's the one they're claiming she violated. There is another one at K, 982.551K, which says that they can terminate for fraud or abuse. That was never brought up. It's not included in the, it was never mentioned as a grounds for termination by anybody. So the question is, number one, did Ms. Curtis actually violate this family obligation. They're saying she didn't supply true and accurate information. So what they're looking at is two documents.
I thought we agreed that she wasn't disputing that she didn't provide that information. She acknowledges she didn't reveal that the homeowner she was renting from was her sister. Isn't that right?
Well, she did reveal it. That's how they found out.
But she didn't reveal it when she signed the voucher.
She didn't reveal it when she signed the voucher.
And now she simply claims that she didn't read the voucher, even though the voucher includes that you must not rent from a family member under the obligations of the family.
Well, if you look at the voucher, the front page that she signs just says, you're signing this voucher and the obligations, are included, the rules of the program are included in the next two pages. And on the third page, it does include the provision that says you mustn't rent from a family member.
Okay, what I'm trying to establish is, are you arguing that she did provide true and complete information, or are you arguing that she acknowledged, are you acknowledging she didn't provide true and correct information, but that you don't think it rises to the level that she should have been ejected or her Section 8 benefits terminated? We're talking about a lot of facts, but I don't think you dispute that she didn't provide true and correct information.
Well, actually, I do dispute that, because if you look at the two documents she signed, she didn't supply any information. Now, the court can look at that and say, maybe she did supply that information, because if she had read it, she would have had a duty to notify HRA, actually, we have a problem, my landlord is my sister. So to the extent that if she had read it, she would have had an obligation to notify HRA, then maybe. But that form doesn't really supply any information. There's no blanks for the tenant to fill out other than, name, address, things like that. The only other document that she signed is the request for tenancy approval. And then there's the part that's called owner certification. And the paragraph under that, which is pre-printed on the form, says the owner is not a family member. And both she and Ms. Shealy signed on that. There's, again, no information to be supplied other than information about utilities and rent and things like that, which were supplied, and it's not disputed that those were accurate. So there is an issue as to whether she actually supplied this information. If she had completed a recertification form and it said, what is your income, and she wrote down her income, she is supplying that information. If that information were incorrect, she would have supplied incorrect information. So,
but by signing it, she's indicating that she's not renting from a family member.
But there's nothing on either of those forms that says, I have read this and affirm that all of the statements of fact in this are true. And in fact, in the owner's certification, it says owner's certification. It doesn't say tenant certification. So there is an issue there. However, there is negligence here because, of course, she should have read through the forms that she signed. We should all read the documents that we sign. We shouldn't sign leases and mortgages without reading through and making sure we've read everything that's in them. However, the fact is that sometimes we do. And that is negligence. There is some fault there, but it doesn't rise to the level of fraud. So what this court in the Hassan v. Dakota County case and the Ellis court in the Eastern District of Virginia in 1992 held is that a inadvertent error is not grounds for termination. The Ellis court discussed the fact that there are two separate grounds for termination listed in the 551 point in 982.551. It pointed out that there's failure to supply information and then there's fraud. And it questioned if a public housing authority could just terminate any time it looked at something and said, oh, you gave us incorrect information. If it didn't have to make a determination that there was intent or fraud involved, then why would Congress have added the separate grounds of fraud? It's hard to establish fraud.
In a case like this, though, if you could establish fraud, you could, in theory, try to recoup the benefits that had previously been paid. But if there's no fraud, all you have is a situation, perhaps, where the person's not eligible, has never been eligible, but now you know she's not eligible. So from that moment on, she's not eligible for the program. So why wouldn't you terminate her?
Well, for one thing, it's not clear that HRA would not have the ability to recoup benefits, because anytime there's a overissuance of benefits as a result of an error, even if it is an inadvertent error, the housing authority may be able to go back and recoup benefits. But they can only terminate if there's fraud, and that's included even in the HUD guidebook that I cited. It discusses different ways of dealing with fraud.
But here, though, once everybody knows she's renting from a relative, she's not eligible.
Well, there's a number of different ways it could be dealt with. One, if she did request a reasonable accommodation, because she can rent from a sister if it's necessary because of a disability. And there was quite a bit of evidence provided as to Ms. Curtis's disability and the fact that this home was on one level. She has two children. She lives in Cloquet. It's hard to find suitable housing that's available for rent that accepts Section 8. So if she had known, she could have requested a reasonable accommodation at the time they entered into the voucher back in 2015. And she requested a reasonable accommodation in 2018 as soon as it became apparent that she would need one in order to rent from her sister. That's not something that's before the court. That's something that what we are asking is, if this court decides that this inadvertent error was not grounds for termination, then we're asking for a remand for HRA to decide whether or not she can continue to rent from her sister under a reasonable accommodation. Alternatively, if she can't, what would happen is she would be issued a voucher to take it and rent someplace else, but she would still keep her voucher. No one is suggesting that she be permitted to rent from a family member in violation of federal regulations without a reasonable accommodation. So if she stayed, either she'd get a reasonable accommodation, or if she couldn't do that, then she'd take her voucher and rent someplace else. Those issues, there's a number of issues that really aren't before the court. What would happen with the back payment? Because there's an issue of her having received benefits to which, under federal regulations, she may not have been eligible. What would happen if she was granted a reasonable accommodation? Would it go forward from now, or would it go back to 2015? So these are things that are not before the court and would have to be resolved if this court were to reverse the termination. What would happen is it would go back to HRA for decision on the reasonable accommodation. So all those things would be decided at in a different forum. They're not before this court. The only issue that's before this court is this error that she didn't realize that she could not rent from her sister. And somehow HRA never realized that she was renting her sister until 3 years later. Is that by itself grounds for termination? Because it's an inadvertent error, we submit that it is not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Respondent, Ms. Dobbins.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Mary Dobbins, and I represent the Cloquet-Carlton Housing Authority. As the court has already pointed out, the facts in this case really aren't in dispute. In 2012, Ms. Curtis moved back to Cloquet and began renting from her sister. In 2015, she obtained the right to get housing assistance through the HRA. As a part of obtaining that assistance, she went through several steps. The first of which was a briefing at the HRA. With respect to that briefing, one of the topics that was specifically covered and the evidence was presented at the hearing was the fact that Ms. Curtis could not rent from a relative, that the federal regulations specify certain immediate family members that are not eligible to be a landlord. That it was covered at the briefing. And Ms. Curtis said that she just didn't listen. She wasn't paying attention. She signed a voucher before she ever went to get, or as she, in the process of getting the housing assistance. The voucher, it's true, it's 3 pages long, and it presents or provides the participant in the housing program with a list of their obligations under the program. It's true that none of them are especially bolded or pointed out, but in together with the information that was provided in the briefing, Ms. Curtis either knew or should have known that she could not be renting from her sister. It's disingenuous for her at this point to now say, well, I didn't listen at the briefing, I didn't ever read the voucher, and therefore you should excuse my program violation. In addition to those first two instances in which she knew or should have known that she couldn't rent from her sister, she and her sister also filled out the request for tenancy approval. That document also clearly specifies that a housing participant cannot rent from certain immediate members of their family. That is unequivocal, and again, Ms. Curtis's answer is, well, I didn't read it. She never, during the entire time that she was applying for and obtaining the housing assistance, never disclosed that her sister was her landlord. And in fact, she didn't do that until 3 years later. The federal regulations are unequivocal that you cannot rent from a relative. Absent a reasonable accommodation that has been approved by the housing authority. Those provisions were added to the program in 1998, so if they're not part of the original Housing Choice Voucher Program regulations. They were added in 1998 in response to what HUD perceived to be program abuses or the potential for program abuses. The program clearly contemplates a third-party relationship between a landlord and a participant. It's not meant to be an opportunity for people's relatives to have real estate investments. It is a, absent very special circumstances, it is an arm's length transaction.
Counsel, Will you please address the argument being made that because in this case there is an absence of a finding of fraud, in other words, this was negligent, that the voucher should be maintained?
Yes, Your Honor. The family obligations, as Ms. Updegraff argued, are set forth at 24 CFR 982.551. One of those obligations is that the information that a household provides to the housing authority must be accurate and it must be complete. It doesn't give a pass for information that a participant fails to mention, like in this instance, the fact that her sister was her landlord. 982.552, which is the section dealing with terminations, allows that permits a housing authority to terminate housing benefits for any violation of a family obligation. And this was a serious violation of a family obligation, the obligation to provide true and complete benefits. The issue of fraud is dealt with separately, and that is not only a family obligation not to commit fraud or criminal misconduct in connection with the housing authority or in connection with the housing assistance, but it's also specifically in Section 552 as a separate grounds for termination. So we're really arguing two separate things, because there are lots of instances in which housing or participants' program violations don't rise to the level of actual fraud, intentional fraud, and don't necessarily even rise to the level of criminal conduct, but they are violations of the obligations of the household under the assistance program, and that is a separate grounds for termination. The federal regulations at Section 552 don't say family obligations can only be used to terminate in the instance of intentional conduct or fraud. They say that a violation of a family obligation would or does constitute a reason to terminate housing assistance. In this instance, we would argue that this is not simply a minor matter that has been overlooked by Ms. Curtis. Because of the change in the federal regulations, it's a recognition that the integrity of the housing program does require a arm's length relationship between landlords and tenants, and that HUD acknowledged that there was a reason or potential for abuse. Ms. Curtis had ample opportunity to make known to the housing authority that her landlord was her sister. She could have done it at the time of the briefing. She could have done it when she signed the voucher. She could have done it at the time that they submitted the request for tenancy approval. Or she could have done it at any time between 2015 and 2018. It's not up to the housing authority to do some sort of independent investigation to make sure that there's not some hidden program violation. It's up to the participant to provide clear, accurate, and complete information to the housing authority. She had an obligation to know what the rules were. She was told what the rules were, and she was chose to disregard those rules.
Doesn't it suggest, though, that she maybe didn't know, because she did apparently tell this fellow that she was, in fact, running from her sister, where if she knew she was in the wrong, she'd probably kept her mouth shut.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the circumstances under which that disclosure were made are a little bit ambiguous in the record. It's at least arguable that it was inadvertent, that it was in the course of a conversation, okay, rather than an intentional disclosure. But that's not clear in the record. Ms. Curtis also seems to be saying that the housing authority should grant her a reasonable accommodation and permit her to stay, or in order to permit her to stay in her sister's unit. And the HRA argues that argument is misplaced at this time. If she wanted to make that argument, she should have made it in 2015. The federal regulations contemplate that if you want to rent from a relative, and the language of the regulations support this, if you want to rent from a relative, you make a request for a reasonable accommodation, and then the housing authority either accepts that accommodation or denies that accommodation, but it happens prior to the approval of the unit for occupancy under the program. And in this instance, she never gave the housing authority the opportunity to either accept or deny that accommodation. She was living with her sister, and she wanted to continue to live She wanted to continue to live in her sister's unit, and she failed to disclose the fact that her sister owned that house. The request for an accommodation right now is 3 years too late. It's impossible for the HRA to go backwards and to say, well, in 2015, these were the factors that were present. We don't know what her disability was in 2015. We don't know whether there were other units that were available that would meet her disability needs in 2015, because the housing authority was never given that opportunity. Arguably, the disability-related needs in this case are pretty minimal. She just needs a one-level unit. And to the extent that there are other units available that are not owned by a relative, that would negate the granting of the reasonable accommodation. All she needs is a one-level unit. Finally, Your Honors, I'd like to very briefly address the reliance on the Hassan case. And I think it's important for this reason. The Hassan case was decided in 2010. And the case primarily dealt with the issue of whether or not the housing authority involved had an obligation to consider mitigating circumstances with respect to the program violation. That was one of a series of cases involving a particular provision in the federal regulations. And I would argue that Hassan has actually been overruled by the case of Peterson versus the Washington County Housing Authority, because Peterson specifically held, and it's a published case, Peterson specifically held that the language of the regulation with respect to the consideration of mitigating circumstances, it is a May regulation. And Hassan was remanded to the Housing Authority with a finding that the Housing Authority should have considered mitigating circumstances with respect to the termination of Ms. Hassan's housing benefits. And in that case, the mitigating circumstances included a confusion over the information that had been provided and whether or not it was accurate. And more importantly, there was also a specific consideration of whether or not Ms. Hassan's language difficulties contributed to her program failures. None of those factors are present in this case. Ms. Curtis was fully aware, if she had paid attention at least, she would have been fully aware that she couldn't rent from her sister. She was told that at the briefing. She was told that when she got her voucher. She was provided with adequate information from the housing authority that specified what she could or could not do on the program. This is not a minor issue. It is a matter of a clear violation of the federal regulations. And for that reason, we ask that the housing authority's decision to terminate be upheld, and that the hearing officer's decision upholding the termination also be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, please proceed.
Thank you. A couple of points. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on this, because the fact that this was non-fraud, negligent, not a deliberate omission or attempt to conceal information, that was never contested. It was all parties agreed on that, including Mr. Nelson. However, Ms. Dobbins has referred to the presentation Mr. Nelson made. He said he had they gave a briefing and he had a PowerPoint which covered this. That PowerPoint is not part of the record. We don't know what's in the PowerPoint. We don't know how it was covered. So it's unclear how exactly that information was covered there. Ms. Dobbins said that Ms. Curtis did not disclose that her landlord was her sister, but in fact, she did disclose it. She disclosed it when it came up. The reason she didn't disclose it before is because she didn't know it was material. She didn't know it was anything. There was never an application form she completed where it said, are you renting from your sister? Or asking her to initial next to a box saying, my landlord is not a family member. Nothing like that. The other thing I just want to emphasize is that the cases that I cited in my brief, what they talk about is what happens if we allow a housing authority to terminate somebody's voucher anytime there is any kind of an error, no matter how inadvertent and how trivial, in their paperwork. And those courts, the Ellis Court, I submitted a case from the District of Minnesota Federal Court, Virginia Heidela, the Ohio case, the Smith case, all of the courts expressed great concern. What happens if public housing authorities can say, oh, tenant, you made a mistake. You didn't completely complete this form. And looking back at the, I think it was the Hassan case, where she didn't, she tried to provide tax documents, but she wasn't able to quite get a complete set of her tax documents in, but she tried. So technically, was that a failure to supply correct and complete information? Yes. But again, the court none of these courts feel that this kind of a serious deprivation, someone, a low-income family losing their housing, that is an appropriate penalty for a good faith error. These housing programs should not be set up to be a trap for the unwary. Yes, there are hoops they have to jump through. They have to provide information. They have to document eligibility. They have to cooperate. But just because someone makes a mistake doesn't mean that they should lose their housing. And Ms. Dobbins suggested that we're asking for a reasonable accommodation retroactive to 2015. Again, that is not before this court. It may be that the reasonable accommodation would go back to 2015. It may be it would go forward from 2018. I submit that the fact that this did not come up until 2018 is a result of the fact that Ms. Curtis did not know that this was something that mattered one way or the other to her Section 8 housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, counsel. The matter has been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.